Happy January 31st, 2020. Jason, where did January go, man? We just had our New Year's show, man. And the whole month is gone.
Every year, it just feels like time's going faster and faster. It's just not slowing down.
I know. It's just crazy. Well, gang, today we have a show that I'm just calling Angels and Monsters. Angels and Monsters is the name of the show today, and I'll explain to you why. So we've got some incredible guests coming on the show. We are going to start out with John Guile, and he is definitely one of the angels, longtime executive director of Project Angel Food. I think John has raised tens of millions of dollars over his life. Time for LGBT causes, everything from HIV and AIDS to LGBT equality to addiction recovery. I mean, he is just one of those angels. So we'll be talking to him about what motivates him to do what he does. And then he's being followed by the publisher of Adelante magazine, Al Ballesteros, will be coming in. Al, started out as a young Latino activist out there in the streets. Now he is the chief executive officer of a healthcare organization here in Los Angeles, but he's also the publisher of Adelante, reaching out hard to reach Latino, Latina, Latinx communities. And we'll be talking to him about what moves him. And then the monsters part, well, we've got a great little group coming on. Conversion Therapy Dropouts is their tongue-in-cheek name. They represent the people who dropped out of conversion therapy, but they're not the monsters. The monsters are the people who put them into conversion therapy or tried to torture them in conversion therapy. And they'll be coming on talking about, their experiences and why they chose to drop out. Can you imagine, Jason, if we sent you to conversion therapy, try to convert you into becoming a homosexual?
I was going
to
say, what am I being converted into exactly?
Tell me how that would go. I mean, it just wouldn't, it'd be a non-starter. It's the same. It's a non-starter for LGBT people. Yeah. So that's our lineup. We're going to have a great conversation here. So let's warm up for our very first guest, and that is the extraordinary John Guile. John, I picked that song for you. That's Madonna. I thought I'd do something age-appropriate for you.
I love it.
Couldn't do anything new from the Grammys. We picked something from the 80s for you. So, welcome, John. Glad to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, I know you're a local Whittier boy, right? You were born and raised here
in Southern California.
Oh, and that's like Richard Nixon area, right?
It is, yes. Some people know that.
What motivated you to even get involved with community?
I think it was just my mother's upbringing. We were raised Catholic, and I remember she used to talk to me a lot about being grateful, and we have everything we need, and in very early age was taught to help the poor and to strive to do better for others.
Well, that's more along the lines of Pope Francis rather than the Pope right before him.
The Pope right before him
was a little hardcore. Yeah. So when did you first start? High school days? College days? When did you first start to get into service?
I think definitely was involved on the college campus. And then the first job really out of college helping others was with the Muscular Dystrophy Association right near here on Wilshire Boulevard was my office. And learned a lot about fundraising there. And then when the AIDS crisis erupted in the 80s, I was drawn to that, and I can still remember being there on King's Road in West Hollywood and reading about the organization called Project Angel Food. In fact, I can remember that right now. Reading back then, you would actually look into
LA
Times and the job jobs. Right?
In the water ads.
And it said executive director of Project Angel Food in the back pages of the LA Times.
Now, Project Angel Foods was created by David Kessler, and who was a guest on our show here, and Marianne Williamson, who was running for president.
That's right.
And they created this organization to give hot meals to people who were terminally ill with AIDS at the time.
Right.
And you saw it and you applied, and you then took it from one level, I think, to a quantum leap to something very different.
It was to think back on those days are really amazing. The church was at the corner of Fountain and Fairfax, and what I realized very early on were that all of the pieces of this puzzle were there in the organization already, and my job was to put the pieces together and to turn it into an organization that could even do more and help more people. And subsequently, it's become not only, it was born and raised in the gay community and through the work of the lesbians and the gay people that helped thousands and thousands of people with AIDS. It now serves all of Los Angeles County, people with cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes. It's remarkable what a gift the LGBTQ community could give to the whole county.
How many meals do they serve now? Do you know?
over 1,500 people a day get food.
1,500 people a day.
That is amazing.
Amazing.
Right?
Wow. And I'm guessing when you got started, it was just a handful of people in the kitchen.
That's right.
Cooking up meals to deliver to a handful of guys out there.
I think we had a staff of 13, and I believe now there's a staff of 70 people, and the incredible executive director, Richard Ayoub, and a great team there.
Yeah, but you were the executive director for how long?
16 years.
16 years.
Yes, and I'm still there. I'm the official Project Angel Food Ambassador. I like that title.
Well, when you started, what was the budget? And when you left, what was the budget?
I think it was probably around $900,000 when I started. And when I left, it was around $7 million.
Yeah, that's a quantum leap.
It was a quantum leap.
Coming up next, gang, we'll be talking more with John Guile about his journey and path. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
That's Beyonce singing Halo. We got angel songs running here because we're talking to one of the angels, John Guile. Welcome back, John.
Thank you.
All right. So Project Angel Food, you were there for a bit, but then you kind of branched out and started doing all sorts of other LGBT causes, right?
I did. I started a consulting firm, and I think one of the very first calls was from the Prop 8 campaign and you and a team of people, and I joined to help raise funds to protect gay marriage and Equality California. And then ever since then, that was 12 years ago, the phone rings and I go where I'm needed. I've been very, very fortunate. And the remarkable part is really people say, how do you raise so much money? And it's really about getting out and telling the story. And, you know, of so many amazing organizations, women and men, that are changing the world. And it gives me a lot of strength and gratitude to be part of the LGBT community. Just meeting people and seeing what people are doing. I like being around doers, right? People that are doing, and there are remarkable projects happening from coast to coast in our community.
I know you're really humble, but there's a moment not to be humble. How much money have you raised, do you think, for LGBT causes?
I haven't added it up, but it's a lot, and definitely more than $10 million, maybe more. So
more than $10 million, yeah.
Yeah, and there's some big things, you know, some really great things happening this year.
Yeah, well, I know you're doing the AIDS Monument in West Hollywood. That's $5 million all by itself.
That's right. That's right. And that was a whole team effort. We have, you're the founder and a group of people, and I was called to help volunteer, and then we're closing in on $5 million for the AIDS Monument, which will remember the thousands and thousands of people that have died and educate millions more in the coming years. That's an exciting campaign, and you know, I get passionate about things. The funny story there is I ran into someone in a restaurant that I hadn't seen in 10 years who hardly knew me. I said, I've got to tell him about the monument and ask him for money. And the minute he stood up from his chair, I walked over and said, I need your help with the monument. And he said, I knew when he looked me in the eye and he said, I'm going to help you. And he sent $100,000.
Wow.
I won't say who it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, and so it's getting out and telling the story. I don't really take on projects that I'm not passionate about because I have to feel it in my heart to be effective.
Hmm. I know that there's LGBT activists listening in, you know, 28 cities right now. And the reality is a lot of them are involved with one organization or one cause or another. And I think the hardest thing for any activist is asking people for money. What advice do you give to people when they say, oh my God, I don't know how to fundraise. I don't know how to ask for money. We need to meet our goal. John, help us. What do we do?
So the one thing is to inspire people with a connection to yourself, to why this is important to you personally. And then on the business side of it, put yourself in a position of say you had a really great stock tip, you knew that a stock was going to appreciate in value, you would be so excited to tell people, you should invest in this, right? You should make an investment in this because it's going to turn out really great for you. And it is the same feeling that when you're talking to someone about investing in the AIDS Monument or Project Angel Food or One Archives or, you know, Outfest, that your people that invest there are going to get a great return on their investment in feeling good, doing good, and just being a better member of society.
Yeah. That's actually good advice.
Yeah.
Get people excited. You got very passionate about Pete Buttigieg. I think he's your guy, right?
So, yes, I was so distraught after the 2016 election, and I had been all across the country for the Democratic nominee then, Hillary Clinton, and I was taking time off from any campaigning on the presidential level because presidential politics is a very tough business. Mm. And I got a call from Pete Buttigieg's office, and they said, well, can you meet? And this was back in February or March. And I said, you know, I'm not really going to jump in and do anything, but I'm happy to meet. And right when I met him, I was deeply inspired.
Had you heard of him before?
Commitment. I had heard a little bit about him, and I knew he was friends of our mayor, Eric Garcetti. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't paid a lot of attention to it, honestly. And right when I met him, I was moved by what I could tell in his soul, his commitment, and his intelligence. And so I signed on. And one of the first things I did was to post. I'm a very active user of social media. And I posted something about come meet Mayor Buttigieg, and the response was remarkable. People that I have never seen involved in politics before, cousins I hadn't heard from in years, Republicans, people of faith, all sending in contributions and asking, can I please meet him? And it was remarkable. And hundreds of people in the first few months that I joined. So I realized we were onto something, and then I spent a lot of time with Mayor Buttigieg and his team. And I've just been motivated and excited, and I think over 30 or 40 events, and I'm going to head to New Hampshire in a week or so and campaign there, and we'll see how it goes. I'm very, very excited and optimistic.
Yeah, I have to ask you, that little queer boy in Whittier that came out in the 70s and then walked through an epidemic in the 80s and the 90s, did you think in your lifetime you'd be out campaigning for a viable, openly gay person running for president of the United States?
Never. Never in a million years. I did not think it was possible. I spent... like many people, you know, well into my mid-20s figuring out how I was going to be un-gay. Mm-hmm. It's so sad. And it was, you know, it's psychologically traumatic to spend the first formidable 20 years of your life figuring out how you cannot be who you really are. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. So that, I think, is also the expression of why I'm so involved in the community is to, it is home. It really is home, mm-hmm. what we have with our brothers and sisters in the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm. You do work, I think, for the Choruses of San Francisco, the Chorus of Los Angeles. I think you also do work for recovery out in the community. Those are other examples of what you do.
Absolutely. Well, I am a long-term sober, and that's the top priority in my life. Certainly, if I don't have that, none of the other pieces come together. So I'm excited about helping, you know, Friendly House for Women on Normandy, which is the oldest recovery home for women. It's not LGBTQ specific, but LGBTQ accepting. And then I'm helping Awakening Recovery with their plans to expand their home for the programs for men and women. And, you know, it's remarkable that the strength of our recovery community across the country as well.
I'm sorry. I just think you're incredible. I'm just going to say that.
You know,
I adore you, but I'm sitting here listening to you talk about you're raising money for women in recovery. You're raising money for people with HIV and AIDS. You're raising money for the arts. You're raising money for delivering hot meals to people who need food. You're the true good Samaritan.
Well, thank you. I go where I'm needed, and it's inspiring.
Yeah, you're inspiring. What keeps you motivated in doing all this daily? Because, I mean, there must be some point where you're like, oh, God, I can't deal with another human being. People are making me nuts. Must have moments like that.
You know, staying in tune to results, and there, I do get worn down, and it's exhausting. There are times when every single meeting I go to, my work is very results-oriented. So virtually every meeting I go to, not this meeting, you guys don't really need anything from me.
No.
But most every meeting I go to, people are saying, what are you bringing? You know, what are the results? So it's exhausting. I get very, very, very excited when we can secure a new donation and when we can bring new notice to something of importance. I'm helping the Black AIDS Institute right now, and we just helped them secure a major grant from Gucci, the first time grant, which is very exciting. And to realize, you know, in the next 5 years, we could bring an end to HIV and AIDS as we know it.
That's amazing.
Some cities have seen a drop of 70% in infection rates. So, you know, working towards a goal and seeing that things are going to be done. The AIDS Monument, for example, which you started and in which this incredible group of people have put in, we're going to see the beginning and the middle of this beautiful and the end of this installation of a beautiful art piece that millions of people will see. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
Having plans and looking forward and you know, sometimes I'm already in November, right? What are we doing in November? So the other advice I have is, you know, spend time with young people and mentor. Hmm. And help people and be kind to young people in our LGBTQ community.
Oh,
there's right. So much strife still.
Yes.
And on acceptance and shame. And if we can be a positive role model and being kind to the bus driver, being kind to the bus driver makes a huge difference.
So you talk about role models. You have met numerous celebrities, politicians, presidents. Is there one person or persons that you've met that you just... We're in total awe.
Well, Barack Obama certainly had a real aura about him, and I was so proud to work on that campaign and knock on doors all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Michelle's doing something right now, right?
Michelle Obama is doing VoteProud.org with us. We're partnering with Michelle Obama on VoteProud.org. If you can all log on to VoteProud.org, make sure you are registered to vote. 1.6 million LGBTQ people did not vote or register the last time around. If they did, we would have a different outcome. VoteProud.org is a nonpartisan organization focused on registering voters.
That's amazing. John Gile, our time has come to an end. I can hardly wait to have you come back. Bring any of these causes by.
Thank you.
Or some radio time. We would love to promote all the good work that you're doing and that they're doing. Gang, when we come back, we'll be talking to the publisher of Adelante magazine, El Ballesteros. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. That's the Judds singing Guardian Angels, because I've got another guardian angel on the show now, the incredible Al Ballesteros. Al, welcome to the show.
Hey, John.
It's good to have you here.
Well, thanks for inviting me down.
We're calling this show Angels and Monsters. John Gile was on right before you, a longtime executive director of Project Angel Food. Now we've got you on because you're the CEO of a big healthcare organization, right?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, it's JWCH Institute. We go by Wesley Health Centers as well. We're a federally qualified health center.
Doing HIV, doing everything?
We do HIV. We do homeless. We operate the largest homeless clinic in, I believe, California in Skid Row. We serve about 10,600 down there at 5th and San Pedro.
Oh, my God. That is Skid Row, Skid Row. You're not talking about the generic Skid Row. You're talking about actual Skid Row downtown Los Angeles. And you do indigent families, I think, all across the city also.
Yeah. We do. So anyone can come to Wesley Health Centers regardless of ability to pay, regardless of insurance status, regardless of any status. You know, and we don't turn anybody away.
Yeah. You got a great story. I'm going to dig in a little bit. You were once just a young activist in your 20s, right?
I was.
How did you first get involved with community?
Well, like you, John, I, grew up in Echo Park and, came from a generation that was pre-HIV came from the generation where, you know, we didn't have the Affordable Care Act and things like that. And when the epidemic began to, you know, take hold and spread, it was, you know, our generation, my generation, the generation immediately before, that was sort of ground zero. And so it was, from my experience, becoming infected with the virus and having to fight through that really sort of brought out the activists in me to get engaged in community and get engaged in organizations to try to make a difference for not only myself, but for my friends and for the community and, you know, for the bigger cause.
Hmm. And did you think at one point you were not going to make it?
Oh, absolutely. I think we all did back then in the mid-80s.
Hmm. But you did.
But we did. And here we are on the show with John Durant.
I know. 30 years later, we're still here and kicking. Right. Yes. You were a street activist. Were you out there with ACT UP or Queer Nation, any of that back then in the day?
Absolutely. I was out there. I was out there with ACT UP and with other organizations that joined. I was one of the groups that helped close the streets on Hollywood Boulevard and Highland at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon during rush hour.
Mm. That made a lot of people angry.
Oh, of course. They were pissed off.
But we were trying to get their attention that people were dying and that nobody was doing anything.
They weren't. And, you know, I think shutting down the freeways and shutting down the streets in all major directions at rush hour at Tuesday, I think we did it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's sad that that was the way we had to do it. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
I do. I tell people, you know, before HIV and AIDS, we were all just lower middle class or middle class people without any particular political energy about anything, at least me. I mean, I sort of voted. Maybe I would vote. Maybe I wouldn't. I didn't really care about politics. All of a sudden, everybody started dying and nobody was responding. And then the moment I realized nobody's going to respond, everything clicked. And it was like, okay, no one's going to respond. Two choices. Cower in the corner like a coward, or take it to the streets and scream and shout with whatever breaths I got left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not go quietly into the night.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's kind of ironic, though, because you started out in the streets and now you are the man. You're the CEO. Do you ever get protesters at your clinics about care or anything like that?
You know, we not really. We do have individuals that are, you know, sort of always making suggestions about how the system can be better, not only at Wesley, but in general. And, you know, I think that's good. Mm-hmm. I actually think it's very good, you know, to hear from the community, because when you stop hearing from the community, that's when you know that your services are either perfect, and none of us and nothing's perfect,
right,
or you're irrelevant.
Mm, good point, huh? You are the publisher and editor of Adelante magazine, right?
Yes.
And targets LGBTQ Latinx people?
Yes.
Why?
Well, because there wasn't such a publication 22 years ago. It was a large, the Latino community, gay and lesbian, trans community in LA, biggest population. But there was no publication that specifically spoke to their needs and was addressing the issues. So it needed to be created. And, you know, I'm thankful that my partner and lots of friends, you, many individuals in the community stepped up and helped us, and we got that off the ground.
Mm. It's been how many years? 20?
It's been almost 22 years.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah. And when you think about it, John, you know, I always tell, and I'm very proud of this and proud of Pepe, my partner, and all the writers and people that came to the table to help us do this, because they didn't get paid. Mm. They did this on their own time. Mm. Thousands of hours. I'm very proud of the fact that I believe that Adelante magazine was the catalyst to getting information to the community about HIV and AIDS. The epidemic, I'm sure, would have been a lot bigger. Not to say it's not a big epidemic in LA, but it would have been a lot bigger in the Latino community had Adelante not been there providing education on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm. And is it done bilingually, two languages?
Oh, yeah. It's still Spanish and English.
Oh, really wonderful. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's a fun thing to do. I mean, last night I was at Club Tempo. We did Mr. Adelante 2020.
Tough job, Al.
I know.
We have a bathing suit competition and things like that.
Yeah. You have to strain your eyes on looking at those, you know, individuals that come out, you know, oiled with a nice chest.
Right,
beautiful.
Right. Oh, that's kind of a fun
tough
part
job.
Of your job.
Tough job. It's horrible, John.
Yes, queen.
Yes, queen. That's awesome. I have to ask, you were born in Echo Park. I was born in Lincoln Heights, so I was over the next hillside over. And racism in the LGBT community, people don't want to talk about that, but I bet it's been part of your story, too.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, you know, that's a big topic. And, you know, back then it was very sort of pervasive. I mean, it still is, but... I mean, there was East and there was West, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there were pockets where, you know, you just didn't go certain places. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure that our experiences there are quite similar.
Yeah. Coming up next, gang, we'll be back talking more about Al Ballesteros' incredible life. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. That's Beauty School Dropout for our next guest, Jason. Oh. You can save that for our next guest. Too bad. You blew your wand. It's too late now.
I was doing this for this guest.
No,
I thought that's what you wanted.
No.
Oh, my God.
That's all right, babe. We're still talking to Al Ballesteros here, publisher of Adelante magazine and longtime activist in the Latino community. Welcome back, Al.
Yeah.
It's good to have you here. Let's talk a bit about Latino communities, because with both African American and Latino, there is a down low component, and it's been harder to reach men who have sex with men, is what we've ended up calling them, because they don't identify as gay necessarily. A little bit about your experience with that, and of course, trying to get people on PrEP and why it's important.
Yeah, well, I think that it's very important that we reach communities that traditionally are not able to access services in some of the places that maybe, I have or you have or others. And so one of the hardest populations to get to are those that don't identify. And most of the time, these Latino men are living in places in the county where access by itself is hard to get to. The organizations don't exist. But if we do not figure out better ways to engage the population, then we can't curtail the spread of HIV for men or for women that are engaged with these men that have sex with men.
Right, right. And PrEP is basically a pill. You take a pill a day, right, to prevent the spread
Absolutely.
Of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people have. I think you and I know about PrEP, and I think a lot of my listeners do, but explain PrEP to people.
Yeah, I will. John, it's interesting because I work in the medical field, and so I talk to a lot of individuals that are engaged there, and a lot of folks do not know what PrEP is. They do not know that there is a pill that individuals can take, and if they take it according to how it's prescribed on a daily basis, it can prevent them from becoming infected with HIV if they come in contact with blood products or with the virus. And it's been studied. It's being pushed by the CDC. And so, think about it. There's a pill that individuals can take that can be almost entirely effective in terms of preventing the spread of HIV.
Hmm. With Latino culture, why is it harder to reach? Is it the machismo in the culture? Is it issues of poverty that people are having trouble getting access? Is it language? I mean, is it all of the above and something else? What is it?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. And I also think that, in this day and age when, there's so much pressure on communities to, to survive, to do what they need to do to support families, what they need to do to sort of, improve the communities that they live in. There's a lot of, I think if you look at the sentiments that's coming out of our federal level, and things like that, it becomes even harder for individuals to sort of identify and come out with who they are.
Mm-hmm. So there's also the pressure of immigration status.
Absolutely.
People who are undocumented, not wanting to seek access to any of this.
Absolutely.
Want to stay below the radar then.
Yes.
What about the trans community? Do you work much with the transgender community?
We do, but there are organizations that do that a lot more than Wesley and JWCH does. But sure, we do. We have several trans community outreach workers that actually go out and help the trans community access medical services and PrEP services and HIV care services. So that's it's a huge component of what we do as well.
Hmm. What do you think? I mean, you work a lot with the homeless community, and I think every city in the country right now is experiencing homelessness to some degree. But nobody's got it as severe as Los Angeles. I mean, now they're estimating 70,000 people on the street every night. That's like incomprehensible to me. What do you think should be done? You ever start to think about this, dealing with this population daily?
Yeah, I do. Well, so, it's very multifaceted. I think we need more housing. Obviously, there's not enough low-cost housing. There are 70,000 people on the street, but there are probably triple that number that are sort of on the verge of getting on the street because they're, a paycheck away, if you will.
Or gentrification, or both.
Absolutely. The rent prices in L.A. are very high. There's a mental health crisis of individuals that are living on the street. There is a substance abuse crisis. And, you know, all that sort of comes together and, you know, it becomes very difficult to sort of address the issue because it's multifaceted. Like our teams, we assemble teams that are housing navigators. They do rapid rehousing, but there are also teams that have mental health specialists on them, physicians, as well as individuals that are, you know, that are substance abuse experts. And it takes a team like that to go out and help communities that are on the street because you're dealing with all those particular issues.
Yeah. Here in Los Angeles, Latino means many things. It's not just Mexico. Because I'm Mexican-American, I think you are too, but when we speak of Latino communities, it's very diverse Spanish-speaking communities, yeah?
Right.
From where? All over the world or this part of the hemisphere?
Well, this part of the hemisphere.
Hmm. And are there challenges with that in terms of cultural sensitivity in different cultures? Or?
Well, sure there is. You know, there's big differences between individuals that are from Mexico and from Central America. South America, I mean, there's some language differences, there's cultural differences, approaches are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You remember my deputy, Hernan Molina, he's been on the show. Now, he's Argentinian, and he gets talked to all the time that his Spanish is bad because he doesn't sound like a true Mexican. And he's like, I'm not, I'm Argentinian.
Yeah,
Hernan is a
true. I love him.
Yeah. We're almost ready to wrap up our time. Anything about your website, anything you want to just say before you?
Yeah, you know, you can, so if you're in need of healthcare services and you don't have insurance, you don't have money, you can go to Wesley Health Centers. You just go look us up in Google. If you know, you could come in and you don't have to worry about any ability to pay or whether you have insurance or not. We're here to help you.
That's amazing. You are the angel. You and John Guile, my angels of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Al. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Coming up next, gang, when we come back, we'll be talking about the monsters over at Conversion Therapy by talking to two of the Conversion Therapy dropouts. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. Weird Science by Oingo Boingo. I picked that song for you, Curtis Galloway and Eric Rivera, because that's what conversion therapy seems to be to me, just weird. It's not even science. It's just weird in my book. So welcome to the show, guys.
Yeah, thank you. We're happy to be here.
Curtis, you're a very young man. You're a millennial. You went into conversion therapy. What happened?
Yeah, so when I was 16 years old, back in 2010, I came out as gay to my family, and I had expressed interest in wanting to get a therapist to kind of work through my feelings and kind of really talk about my sexuality, because it's not something that I really had an opportunity to explore. I come from a very small town in southern Illinois, and so there weren't a lot of resources for me. And so I wanted to go talk to somebody and really kind of work through everything that I was feeling. I had some like anxiety, depression. And so my parents took me to someone. We drove down to Kentucky. And
yeah, that's a bad start.
Yeah.
This is not going to end well.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
With all due respect to people in Louisville and other parts of Kentucky.
Yeah, we've got some good work going on there. But I went down there and started seeing this man who was a self-proclaimed Christian counselor. Now he was licensed through the state of Kentucky, but he soon started what is known as conversion therapy. And a lot of what he did was just a full erasure of myself. His tactics were to basically break you down as a person and try to redefine your sexuality and your identity into what he thought was what God wanted, essentially. Mm. And so I started going, and it all started out pretty harmless, but soon it would move into more of, limiting time with friends and, you know, I should be bouncing my eyes away from people that I find attractive and that I should adopt a more masculine persona. I think one of the things was actually engage in more masculine characteristic activities that includes being competent as a man and being powerful in social situations.
What the hell does that mean?
I mean, still don't know what that means.
Jason, what does that mean?
I'm trying to figure that out.
This is the straight dude in the room. I have no idea what that even means or how they would make somebody do that.
I have no idea. During that time, I was like in an emo phase. So I had the really tight jeans, but I also had like the wristbands with the studs on it and like the studded belt, and he pointed to those and told me that the Romans used to wear things like that, and that was a very masculine thing to wear.
Okay, this is like, hey, you ever seen any gladiator movies? This is like from the comedy Airplane. It's just one person's notion of what masculine is. This is just, it's torture. I mean, breaking down a human being to try to create something new is torture.
Yes, and there was a lot of... there's a lot of manipulation on his part with my parents. I would go in and I would talk to him for an hour, or my parents would go in before me and talk to him for an hour. It would just depend on the day. But during the time that he was talking to them, they would voice their concerns over the progress that I wasn't making and the things that I wasn't doing that I was supposed to be doing. And then he would in turn tell them that they need to push more, they need to... really watch me, and it really became a situation where they were just constantly surveilling me and like watching what I was doing constantly, and like showing up to school sometimes, and they would see that I was still sitting with my friends that were quote gay affirming,
meaning nice. I gotta ask Eric, because Eric, you didn't go through conversion therapy, but I was gonna ask you, why did you get involved? I can see why, because I'm sitting here getting angry just listening to this.
Oh, absolutely.
Why did you get involved? I mean,
yeah, once I met Curtis and I learned his story, it did anger me. I did grow up very Christian conservative family. My parents taught Sunday high school, and then I also went through the Royal Rangers program, which is a Christian Boy Scouts through the Assemblies of God. And looking back, you know, it was interesting. So they, of course, tried to influence me to, again, go more on the masculine side with the different programs, different sports and all that, which I did enjoy to a point, but it just wasn't me at the end of the day. But when I heard his story, it did anger me. I have a soft spot for youth and helping youth and mentoring youth, and that's just something that just no one should have to go through.
Well, it's insane. It's just insane. Yeah. I mean, the highest definition of intolerance is demanding that somebody be just like me. I don't want you to be you. I want you to be more like me, or what I think you should be. That's Frankenstein, right? Gee, I mean, you must be in shock. I mean, I can't even imagine what straight people think when they hear this stuff. I mean,
well, just in my opinion, like, don't people know that trying to change how somebody isn't going to work out?
Yeah,
like, let the person be who they want to be.
Well, the whole Spanish Inquisition of the Spaniards going around torturing Jews and people they didn't find to be Christian enough. They boil them in water, they drown them, or the witches of Salem.
And we haven't learned a single thing from history.
I know, it's like history repeating itself in modern day. Mm-hmm. All right, so conversion therapy dropout. By the way, the last guest got to hear Beauty School Dropout because we were going to play that song for you. But we played it for the last guest by mistake. It's a cheeky, cute little play on words, right?
Yeah.
I'm a conversion therapy dropout, you know. Thank God you are, by the way.
Yeah.
Where did you come up with that name?
Well, that name actually, so I guess 2 years ago or so, I had a friend that randomly messaged me on Facebook and was like, hey, take a look at this shirt. And it was a shirt that said conversion therapy dropout on it. And I was like, oh my God, I have to have one of these. And so I bought it and I wore it to like all of my advocacy work, because I've been doing this kind of work for a while now. And the name kind of just sprung from that. I didn't want to use like conversion therapy survivor. I wanted to make it more non-clinical, right? And make it more of a fun name, so it didn't seem so like heavy. And that's where the name came from, was a T-shirt.
You know what? Why not?
And actually, the company that makes those shirts, they still make them, but now they produce our shirts, which has the same thing, just in our colors and has our logo on the back. So
have you had other people come join conversion therapy dropouts? People. far and wide, or how are you building a support group?
Yeah, so a lot of it is just word of mouth. A lot of people finding us on Facebook, that's where our largest base is, finding us on Instagram and Twitter, and people are reaching out and really finding, you're expressing that this is something that they want as survivors. They want a network of other people to understand what they went through and the trauma that they, you know, still deal with, the PTSD that they're still dealing with because of this.
Okay, coming up next, when we come back, more weird science and creating Frankenstein here with conversion therapy. Thanks for tuning in on Channel Q. Now, my young millennials, do you know what song that is? Well, you know, because I told you what to play.
Yeah, but I
you've never heard it before.
Yeah.
Okay, that's Frankenstein, because that's what this segment of the show sounds like to me, like Dr. Frankenstein trying to create a creature out of body parts.
Unfortunately, the creature doesn't get created in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Of this experiment. So.
Yeah, or he does, and he's still gay.
Yeah. So. We're talking to Curtis Galloway and Eric Rivera about conversion therapy dropout. And right before the break, we were talking about the horrendous thing they put you through. I mean, did they ever use the threat of hell and brimstone? I mean, that's like the ultimate threat you can do to a kid. You're going to burn in hell if you don't do this or that.
Kind of. Not explicit. They said that homosexuality is a sin, but it's only considered a sin if you act on it. So had I acted on it at the time, then yeah, they probably would have. But it was never the fire and brimstone part of it that they were using.
So you were only an avowed homosexual, but you weren't a practicing homosexual.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
I used to have a t-shirt that said avowed and practicing homosexual. That's why I wanted to bring up my t-shirt in exchange for your t-shirt.
It's all about t-shirts.
I really didn't know what that meant back then, but back in the 80s, I had a nemesis who was a crazy reverend from the Traditional Values Coalition, and he used to call me an avowed and practicing homosexual. And I'm like, what does that mean? You know? Oh, and he also called me, what was it? I was something of sin, like a whole city of sin. I don't even remember what the word was that he used to use with me, but it was just bizarre.
What happened to that guy?
Yeah, what?
What happened to that
guy? He's still around. They made a lot of money.
Does he bother you anymore?
No, he's got to be in his 90s if he's still.
Wow.
Yeah, he's old.
He was up there.
He's up there. Okay. Yeah, he was up there when I met him 30 years ago. Yeah. You know, I was raised Catholic. So being raised Catholic, were you raised Catholic, Eric?
Christian.
Okay. I dated somebody from Assembly of God.
Okay.
That's pretty out there. I mean, that's...
It's more of one of the stricter, yeah.
Yeah, he used to call it holy rollers and playing with snakes and talking in tongues and all that, right?
Oh, absolutely, yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every church service, someone was saying something, speaking in tongues, and I had no idea what was going on. So.
Right. So, I mean, and by the way, I've had clergy on the show. I've had, you know, out LGBT clergy come on the show. And, you know, religion is very complicated. But the Quran... from my Muslim producer here, and the Bible, you know, there's very limited passages about homosexuality. Of course, it shows up in Leviticus, in the Jewish mores of what they thought was important to spread the population 3,500 years ago, right? But then the Jesus dude didn't say anything about homosexuality. It's only Paul, when he starts writing letters to the Corinthians and the Romans and everybody else 100 years after Jesus died, where we start to get, you know, another set of mores from the Romans. But the Jesus dude didn't say anything about homosexuality.
Right.
Not a thing. Right. I mean, do any of these conversion therapy groups stop for a moment to say, what would Jesus do? That is, they're often WWJD.
No, they don't.
I don't think they do. I don't think they do. I tell you what he'd do. He'd hang out with lepers, prostitutes, and tax collectors, because that's what we know. The people that were the most, you know, not popular of the day is the people he associated pretty freely with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to ask you, how did you decide to finally walk away? Because, I mean, here you are. You're, what, 16, 17 years old. Your mom and dad want you there. They all want you there. But at some point, you got up the courage as a young teen or young adult to say, I'm not doing this. What happened?
Well, it was actually something that my parents had also, I mean, they basically decided. I mean, this man was charging us about $120 an hour, and we were there 2 hours every week to every 2 weeks. So it was really a financial burden. And then my parents also saw that my mental health was declining, and it just wasn't working. Like, nothing that this counselor had wanted me to do and try and all the practices, it wasn't helping, and there was a rift forming in between me and my family. And so, you know, years later, we talked about it, and they told me, they're like, well, it wasn't working. We were seeing that, you know, you were pulling away from us, and, you know, we didn't want this to get in the way of our relationship with you.
This is good news.
Yes.
You have a good relationship with your parents today.
Yes, they made a complete turnaround, and one day just told me that they, you know, that they were very sorry for what happened, and that they were wrong, and that... Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give me an amen or something over there with a sound effect for mom and dad. That is amazing. Come on, producer. You're sleeping. Okay. That is amazing. Mom and dad said, I'm sorry, and they made amends to you.
They might be listening right now. I don't know.
Okay. They probably are. You probably set them up to do that. Because not every parent does that. And, you know, I had a Wendy Montgomery, who was a Mormon mom, had to do the same thing with her Mormon church. That her kid was not changing, and it wasn't working. And finally, the love for her son ended up overcoming all the elders of the Mormon church. And now she has got the elders to finally move. I mean, she's been working on it for 20 years, but... You know, religion's moving. They have to move to meet us where we are. We're not changing, right?
Yeah, and actually, like, my whole church back at home, they were very supportive, too. Once I started doing my advocacy work, it just, all of the support came out that no one was expecting. So it was kind of amazing.
Eric, what's your story? Because Assembly of God, I mean, I'm sure that you heard a lot of anti-homosexual stuff, too, in your church, and... I don't even know if you're gay. I should not be assuming. I assume Jason was gay, and it got us off to a really weird start.
I'm coming out of straight. No. I am gay.
Okay. So, all right. Yeah, okay. Correct. And so what happened with you and your church?
Yeah, I grew up. So I really didn't really come out until closer to 17 in high school. When I actually even realized myself, I kind of realized later on in my youth that I was attracted to men. And so at that point, of course, the typical... from the family and the church and everything else. Oh, this is just a phase. You know, you get through this and this and that. And then I decided to kind of go on a rebellious phase and said, screw all that. I'm going to be myself. And I actually decided to move out of my home. I was just 18 my senior year, so I moved out with a gay couple, which kind of mentored me into the lifestyle, so to speak, and then just kind of started living my life as myself.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was pretty tough.
That's the way it is.
That's the way it is. Yeah. I tried, I'm sure you've heard this, maybe done it yourself. I tried to pray the gay away for a little bit.
I did.
God, you're all powerful. Take it away. And guess what? I woke up the next day and it wasn't away.
Absolutely. So, I said the same prayer. I said, if this is not who you want me to be, change me.
Yeah.
I'm still the same. So.
Pete Buttigieg had a similar prayer. Like, if he could figure out a way to just cut it out of his body, he would have, he said at one point. Now he doesn't, obviously.
Absolutely.
And it just, the amount of torture, and we see it all the time, young LGBT people, who when they reach that point, instead of doing what the two of you did, they kill themselves. Mm-hmm. They cannot exist any longer given those parameters. So they kill themselves. So in essence, you guys are a suicide prevention organization.
Yeah, in a way.
Definitely in a way.
Yeah.
Definitely in a way, because you give people hope. Have you been able to reconcile your Christian beliefs and your Christianity with your sexual orientation?
Yeah. I realize that this is not something that is inherent in the Christian faith. And I always knew that and know that it's supposed to be about love, right, and loving people. And so I've really been able to reconcile that against, this using the Christianity as a weapon is essentially what's happening. And, just realizing that it shouldn't be used like a weapon and that that's not its intent, and that it being used like that does not make the religion inherently wrong or bad.
Right.
And so, coming to that was... a little bit difficult for me, but I think, through the years and, meeting people that are openly gay or openly LGBTQ and in the Christian faith, just talking with them has helped as well.
Hmm. What about you, Eric? Have you reconciled your Assembly of God upbringing with your sexuality?
I have.
How'd you do it?
It's just through faith and prayer, and it's still, at the end of the day, it's still a good set of values to live by, and so I try to keep those values, but I'm still who I am, and God created us, and so that's what I'm going with.
So I have just enough religious training to be dangerous to myself and others. I'm going to tell you that right now. But I will tell you, what the Jesus guy did do, the one group of people he had the harshest words for while he was around were the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the religious leaders of the time. He called them vipers, hypocrites. I mean, the only time he expressed outrage was at the religious leaders because of what they were doing to the people, you know? And they even tried to trick him. What's the greatest commandment? Simple. Love God and love one another. There you go. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely all it is. Kind of cuts through everything about mm-hmm. the weird science and the Frankenstein creations. So what's mm-hmm. coming up next for Conversion Therapy Dropout? What are you guys hoping to do?
Yeah, so we are hoping to start building our network even more. We're wanting to get more survivors involved. We have something called Survivor Sunday, and we're planning one for around February 23rd, and the final details will be coming out about that soon. It's basically a roundtable for conversion therapy survivors to come, meet other survivors, and talk about their experiences, or just sit and listen to others talk about their experiences as well. We find that it's very therapeutic for survivors to talk to other people that understand the level of trauma that they felt and kind of the unique nuances around that and the PTSD that we experience because of it.
Yeah, I would say definitely. Anything you want to add to that, Eric?
Yeah, just join us and keep follow our social media and for our events, and we'll keep you all updated.
All right, that's really, really cool. Jared Hill's going to join because I don't know if he was raised in a church, but he's joining us soon. He wants to join this conversation. So can you guys stick around over a little longer for another 6 or 8 minute segment? Talk
yeah.
to Jared.
Sure. Yeah,
are you ready to go? Coming up next, CUN, coming up next, Tigers. We'll be talking a little bit more about conversion therapy here on Channel Q. Conversion Therapy Dropout. I'm singing to you, gang. We're still here with Curtis Galloway and Eric Rivera singing Conversion Therapy Dropout for their listening pleasure. Thanks, Jason, for finding that for us.
Of course.
That's awesome. I mean, with some joking aside, you suffered PTSD as a result of this.
Yes. Yeah, it's something that I was recently diagnosed with. Going to therapy now. There's been a lot of things that like I just thought were things about myself that I have since been told, no, you're suffering from PTSD and you're defensive because of your experiences. So it was kind of shocking to me, you know, me thinking, you know, having started an organization and doing this advocacy work, you know, I never thought like, oh, maybe this is because of what I had experienced. And it's just unreconciled trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, we your older generation, by the way, like me, we have PTSD too, but from the epidemic. The AIDS epidemic produced, for those of us that walk through it, another form of PTSD. So what we do to LGBT people in this country, it's amazing. You know, to some degree, though, that's probably why we shine so brilliantly. Like a diamond is only created because it is under incredible volcanic pressure under the earth, which creates something beautiful out of that incredible pressure that happens. And I think that's why we're so brilliant and we fight so incredibly. When you walk through something like what you walk through, Or my little Muslim friend over here, what you walk through. Although you're not really, you haven't really felt discrimination because of being Muslim, have you?
No. Well, I mean, when 9/11 happened, like fourth grade, that was the time when it was like, okay, you got to kind of stay quiet about who you are and what you are.
You couldn't come out as Muslim,
As a young child, I mean, there were people that were just, ruthless back then. Yeah. So you couldn't really do much.
And I remember people were like going after Sikhs because they had a hairdress on and not realizing that's not even Muslim.
Right.
That's not even Muslim. Yeah, it's another religion, completely different. I mean, ignorance has many faces.
And then I knew some Indian friends in high school, and because they had turbans, they would get targeted too. And it's just like, you don't even know what religion they are.
It's ignorance. It's ignorance. At the end of the day, it's ignorance. And my God, how many times has religion, you know, and I got to say this too, because I don't think religion's bad or evil. And I think actually religion has a very good and helpful purpose, but it's a double-edged sword. It can cut two ways. Like most things, there's nothing that's ever absolute.
It's the human perspective of religion that twists it in a certain way that may not be favorable to others.
Yeah. Which is why, okay, now I'm getting on my soapbox here, which is why the founding fathers were very specific about the separation, a wall between church and state to protect both. Protect the state from religion being overbearing with any one particular religion requiring adhesion, but it's also to protect religion from the dirt of politics. I mean, they both, when you mix them together, they both get all wrapped up. Oh my God, Jarryd Hill is walking in. You're just in time.
Jarryd Hill.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jarryd Hill.
Oh no, not Jarryd Hill.
Jarryd Hill.
How's it going?
Jarryd, Curtis Galloway on my right,
hey,
Eric
Curtis.
Rivera on my left.
Hey there.
Both, they are conversion therapy dropouts.
Oh, nice.
They dropped out.
I was worried about what that last word was going to be.
Conversion therapy dropouts.
Okay.
They didn't quite make it.
Okay.
Were you raised religious?
I was raised super religious, yeah. I always say that one of the challenges of coming out for me and having my parents and family tell me that I need to pray and be delivered was that I also believed that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that can be really, really difficult for a young Christian person because you've probably heard most of your life, in my case, all of my life, that, you know, God hates gays and it's an awful thing to be gay and you need to pray and be delivered and changed. And I came out when I was 19 and I had spent most of my teenage years praying and asking God to change this and take it away. And that had not happened. So it was difficult for me because I wanted it to be changed. And eventually I, after coming out, I said a prayer that was, you know, I don't think this is something that I can change. And if it's something that you want changed, I trust that you will change it. But I'm freeing myself of the daily worry and concern about like what you want me to be. That is not who I am. So, yeah.
Was this in the Black Church, Southern Baptist?
Or? Yeah, I mean, I'm from the Bay Area, but I come from a deeply Christian Black Church family, and that was a major part of the challenge for me with coming out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Curtis, Eric, thank you guys for coming on the show. I hope that you'll come again, because I do want to hear a follow-up on how your work is
Absolutely,
going.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And tell us again, your website is what?
It is conversiontherapydropout.org.
All right. I love that.
I love it, too. So if you want to drop out of conversion therapy, visit the website. You, too, can be a conversion therapy dropout. I love that. Gang, when we come back, Jarryd and I will be like talking about the crazy week we've all been through. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. Welcome back, gang. I am still here with Jarryd Hill, and we're going to talk about this day because it's a historic day. It looks like the U.S. Senate is on its path to acquit.
Well, it's a
knucklehead.
It's a looming question. I was tweeting this morning that it's kind of crazy. I even talking with people that I know that work in the Senate. None of us really know what's going to happen today. So right now, the both sides are doing their final like debate. Each of them have 2 hours. I believe the Democrats are wrapping up their 2 hours right now. And the president's counsel will then get up and kind of speak to their side. And then seemingly there will be a vote on witnesses. We don't know what's going to happen today because Lisa Murkowski came out and said that she's going to vote no on witnesses, which makes it seem like there's a 50-50 vote, which could then make it go to Chief Justice John Roberts, who's presiding over this case from the Supreme Court, and he might have to be the swing vote.
God, he would never want to do that.
Which he does not want to do that.
He likes to stay above politics.
However, John Roberts has surprised us on occasion with some of these Supreme Court decisions. So you don't know what's going to happen there. There's also talk that Mitch McConnell might put the trial into recess until Wednesday of next week, bringing it out. That came out from, the Washington Post earlier this morning. The Democratic senators don't know why that would possibly happen, but there is reporting that says that that is something that could happen today. Another thing that happened today, John Bolton, another excerpt from his book came out from the New York Times within the last hour and a half.
What's the newest excerpt that
Donald Trump called for him to make a phone call to the Ukrainian president to pressure him about this what John Bolton later called a drug deal as early as May of this year, which extends the timeline out months before the phone call, and that Cipollone, who is one of the president's counsels, who's actually presenting in the Senate right now, was there in the room when this happened.
At the
risk of the Hamilton pun, and so. So it kind of blew this open again this morning to say, like, you don't know what we don't know, right? And that there are so many elements of this story that are continually developing. Every single day of this trial, there has been a new piece that came out that was unexpected, that we didn't know was going to come before, whether it came from a John Bolton excerpt, whether it came from Lev Parnas having something to say about someone else that he spoke with, most recently Lindsey Graham. There's always been some kind of unknown about this. I said on our show all the time, Rachel Maddow references impeachment as a wild animal. You don't know what it's going to do. And so if we are to wait until Wednesday, who knows what else could come out by then? And those are the major questions that loom right now. Will there be witnesses? Will we be getting any more testimony from anyone else? Who's going to vote yes and who's going to vote no? And then ultimately, who's going to vote to acquit?
Well, you know, Lamar Alexander, Republican from Tennessee.
I believe so.
At least he came out with the honesty to say what the president did was wrong. Mm-hmm. The Democrats have proved their case.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's an impeachable offense.
Which,
at least I can respect that. He's like, at least you acknowledge that they proved it.
I can halfway respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've seen so much evidence. I mean, I think it's always important to remember, like, the smoking gun in this case came out at the very beginning, right? Like, normally the smoking gun comes out eventually.
He admitted that he did this.
They released this memo that they always reference as a transcript, but the document on it says this is not a direct transcript, right?
This is not quid pro quo.
Exactly. And then they have shirts that say, like, read the transcript. The transcript says this is not a transcript. But he says, like, I did this. This is what I did. They showed you the phone call, and I'd have China do it too. And it's like, that is kind of what is mind-blowing about this sometimes. Yeah. But then it's not, because we've seen Republicans do this kind of thing again.
They should just tell the truth. Yeah, what he did is wrong, and we don't care. That's
say
the truth.
Say that. Like,
that
exactly.
is the truth.
We just don't care. And I think it's really, really important to look at this from a couple of different vantage points. Number one, we are being asked to believe that every single person who has testified in this situation is telling a lie. And that Donald Trump is the only stand-up, honest guy in this whole situation.
Which we all know.
And that has literally never been the case about anyone that's ever talked about Donald Trump.
16,000 lies in 3 years.
And I will remind you, Republicans, including Lindsey Graham, were the people in 2016 talking about Donald Trump as a con man.
Yep.
He's a liar.
Yep.
He's a racist.
Yep.
He's a this, he's a that. And you're asking us to believe that Donald Trump is the honest person in this situation.
Most bizarre period of American history.
It is bizarre,
surreal.
However, it's not. At the same time, a rich, powerful white man getting a trial that is really skewed in his favor. When have we ever seen that happen in America?
What, never?
I'm trying to think. I'm sure it's happened once or a million times before. So, I mean, it's frustrating and angering to watch this happen in real time. But it's also like, this is how America was built.
Yeah.
This is how America was structured. This is how America has sustained itself.
So you and I were going to vote for Kamala Harris March 3rd. She's out. Have you decided who you're voting for yet?
I don't know.
I haven't yet. I'm torn.
Well, I was never like 100% sold on Kamala Harris. I've always liked her.
Right.
If I had to vote today, I don't know. I think it might be Elizabeth Warren. I have a hard time with Bernie Sanders. I can't get excited about Joe Biden. I've never been that moved by Pete Buttigieg, even though he gives a great interview.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine him beating Donald Trump, although I do love the juxtaposition of Pete Buttigieg, like this, you know, white bread, middle America Christian boy who feels like going up against evangelical supported Donald Trump. I am fascinated by that.
It is really screwed up.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had to vote for today, I'd vote for Buttigieg because I'd want him to do well.
Okay.
But I really want to win. I really want to beat Donald Trump in November so that this stain on history ends up with a happy ending.
I'm not sure.
Because it ain't happening in the next few weeks.
Joe Biden is, all, you know, the great white hope. And, like, I'm not convinced that Joe Biden, you know, pulls it out in November. And I mean, if it's going to be Bernie Sanders, I will vote for him, you know, in the general happily. If it's going to be Pete Buttigieg, I will happily vote for him. I would vote for a can of paint over Donald Trump.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Michael Bloomberg. I got to tell you, I'm looking at him very carefully.
I'm not mad at Michael Bloomberg or Tom Steyer either. So we'll see.
All right. Drop the Subjects up next with Jared Hill.
Yes.
And Ali.
Today's my last day on Drop the Subject.
But he's not going away.
I'm not going away. We have election night in late night, Monday night at 9 o'clock right here on Channel Q.
Gang, we'll see you next Friday on Channel Q.